Session number 10181, Mr. Hugh Williams, part one.
Whereabouts were you born, Mr. Williams?
I was born in a little village called Gilnoch Goch, South Wales.
Can you spell it?
G-I-L-F-A-C-H, G-O-C-H, Gilnoch Goch.
Which year was this?
February 1913.
What did your father do for a living?
Well, he was a journalist and he was a poet.
Was he able to earn money through being a poet?
No. He earned a few checks, but he didn't make a living at it. He made a living at writing articles for the press, and also he worked as on a colliery as a check weighman.
Did he write poems in English or in Welsh?
In English.
And I think you were telling me that he's got his bust in the local museum.
Yes, yes. He was a well-known Welsh poet. He had four books of poems out.
What was your own education?
Just primary school.
How old were you when you left?
I left at 14.
To do what?
I went on the mine.
Were you a face worker?
Yes, I was on the coal till I was 17 and a half. And I left there then. I went to London for greener pastures, as I thought.
What were conditions like in the mines in those days?
Oh, it was real pick and shovel, real physical work. As a young lad, it was no mechanisation, nothing at all, like modern mining. Just simply pick and shovel. I worked in, my last seam I worked in was 2'6", crawling on my belly and on your hands and knees all the time.
Were you physically able to cope with the work?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, it was it's all that was available to us as lads in the village. It was a coal mining village. There was no other industry, nothing there at all.
How did you come to be interested in politics?
Well, the whole village was politically minded. It was always, as kids, we were always going to political meetings or listening to political meetings at the back of the halls and so forth. My father was politically minded. The whole family was politically minded.
Which political party did your parents support?
My father originally, and mother, my mother was a strong liberal in the beginning. My father was a liberal, but eventually I can remember him saying he will vote for the Labour from here. How old was I be then? About 10 or 11. He voted Labour from about 11, I think.
Do you know why he changed?
Well, he was an intelligent man, and I think he felt that the Labour Party was the best thing for him or for us, as he thought, I should imagine, at that time. But he was a well-read man. As a child, I didn't really understand most of the things, but I know I can remember him telling me that the future for the working class, he told me, was the Labour.
Did your mother go with him when
yes,
he changed?
Yes, yes. Oh, yes, she was a loyal wife.
What kind of books did you read at home which had an influence on you in those days?
The Iron Heel by Jack London. My father gave me that to read when I was about 13. Jack London's Iron Heel, that's the book that impressed me most.
This is the book about the coming of fascism, isn't
that's
it?
Right. Jack London, the Iron Heel, no, yeah, that's right, the early days of fascism, that's right. Because I'm fascism. And then I read lots of other books then. He gave me quite a lot of books to read. He made us read good books, good novels and things like that. I remember him buying The Count of Monte Cristo for me to read. Well, that was hard going in the beginning, but I did like the Monte Cristo in the end. Robinson Crusoe as a boy, he made me read that. He was always telling us to read good books. If we were reading a comic, he didn't mind us reading comics. He was pleased to see us read as long as we were reading. But he always say, well, read a comic now, but as you grow older, read other books. He encouraged us to read. As a family, we all read well. He was a strange bringing we had, because people ask me, when did I learn to play chess? Well, I can never remember learning to play chess. I've always played chess. My father was always playing chess, always solving problems. I never remember being taught the moves of chess. None of my families, none of my brothers and sisters. They all can play chess, and none of them can remember learning chess.
Did you start to read political works?
No, I didn't write political. I wasn't politically minded as such myself. It was a while before I became politically minded. But as a young boy, no, I just followed what the other young lads were doing. I wasn't consciously politically minded.
When you say you went to London for new pastures...
Yes, well, I suddenly got fed up with mining. I saw that I'm not going to stay here for the rest of my life. And at that particular time, I was on the night shift. I was going to work at 10 o'clock at night and coming home at 8 o'clock in the morning. And then going to bed, I was seeing very little daylight. I was on the night shift. So I got up one morning and told my mother I was having my next wages and I was going to London. And I went to London.
Did you have a job to go to?
No, I didn't. I just went to Cardiff Station, got me a 19 and fourpenny ticket to London. I didn't know where I was going. My mother pleaded me not to go. My father said, oh, let him go. He said, he'll learn. And he did. And I went, and I was in London 3 days and three nights. I slept in the Salvation Army for two nights. And the third night, I just walked the streets of London. And the next day, I went to Whitehall, and I joined the British Army.
Which year was that?
I was 18. I was 1931.
What had prompted you to join the army?
Well, I didn't have a job, and I didn't want to go back home, because I had left home. I didn't want to be defeated, so I joined the British Army in Whitehall in August 1931.
Which units did you join?
The Royal Army Medical Corps. And I was sent there to Crookham Camp, Aldershot.
What was your training like?
Well, the six-month initial training was really tough. The discipline then was the old army days, 2 shillings a day. All discipline, rough, tough discipline.
Can you give any examples?
Well, yes, I mean, they talk about bull. There was a lot of bull in you couldn't look the right way. I mean, we weren't allowed out for 6 weeks. We had to learn to walk. We had to learn to walk with our swagger cane. And because we were in the medical corps, we had to be scrupulously clean. We had to scrub the barrack room twice a day, more or less, theoretically. Every bucket had to be shining. It was that kind of discipline, and harsh on the parade ground as well. We had to learn all the movements of drill. Also, we had to learn stretcher drill, all the things that go with military discipline. Very tough.
Did you resent the discipline?
In the beginning, yes, because I had not known discipline. I was a free agent. I was like a bird, lived in the valleys, on the mountains. I resented discipline in the beginning, but I learned to see that I couldn't buck the system. In other words, it beat me down and I knuckled under.
What were you actually trained to be in the Royal Army?
Medical man for the troops, first aid man.
A stretcher bearer?
No, first aid, no, not stretcher bearer, first aid. All the splints and bandages and all that. A medical orderly.
Did you see service abroad, or was it just in
Britain? Well, I went from Crookham Camp then to Edinburgh Castle. I was booked in the military hospital at Edinburgh. I was there for nearly 2.5 years, that's right. And I finished my time in the army there. I signed on for 3 years in the regulars and 7 in the reserve. And I finished my 3 years in Edinburgh Castle.
What do you think that the army gave you?
It gave me a feeling of well-being. It gave me a feeling of well-being. It also gave me a knowledge of other than Gilbert Goch. I didn't know there was anybody else other than Gilbert Goch. And I saw the world. I saw Edinburgh. I was very pleased to be in Edinburgh. I enjoyed other people's company. And I enjoyed the comradeship of the British Army, of the Army. And because I was in the medical corps, most of our time was working in the hospital in Edinburgh, the discipline was much, much easier, much relaxed. Very relaxed, the discipline, when you're working in the military hospitals, more or less a civilian job.
And presumably it gave you something in the way of skills.
Oh, yes, I was a skilled orderly. I was a skilled trained nurse. At the end of my 3 years, I was trained nurse.
Did it fit you for civilian employment?
Yes, at that time, male nurses were a scarcity in civilian life. So when I came out of the service, I did try for jobs in civilian hospitals, but they looked askance that he was a male nurse. What do you know about nursing? I told him I knew all about nursing, from bedpans to bandaging. But no way. Women were the nurses, not men.
So there was a kind of sex discrimination?
Absolutely, 100% discrimination. You were kind of, and in the end, you didn't apply because you would have been laughed at, more or less. So I never bothered then. Came out of the army, I went back home. I was home for a few weeks, a couple of months, I think. And by then, I had a friend in London, a fellow by the name of Billy Davis. We went to school together in Gilver. And I wrote to him and he wrote back, and I went up to London and lived with him for a couple of months in Diggs in London.
This must have been in 1934, was it?
That's right, 1934. And there, a lot of unemployment about then, and there I got involved in political meetings. I was going to all the political meetings in Hyde Park. I was unemployed. So I was enjoying myself politically then, wandering around, reading a lot of books and meeting various people.
Who introduced you to politics?
Billy Davis, a friend of mine from Gilbert. He was interested. He was, he was into everything politically. And also, there was a fellow from America. His name was Gilbertson. I always remember Gilbertson. And he was a very odd character. I liked him immensely, but he was strange. He'd been to America. He'd been in America for 8 or 9 years, and he came back home. And he'd been in the Wobblies in America. He'd been a member of the Wobblies, and he used to tell us most harrowing tales of his experience in America. And he was a very enlightened man, an intelligent fellow.
Can you tell me specifically what he said that was horrible?
Well, he said the conditions of the strike breaking. He got beaten about the head during strikes and things like that. The Americans were fantastic strike breakers. And that's why he came back home, because they'd smashed his arm on his shoulder.
I think we ought to say that the Wobblers are the IWW.
That's right, that's the International Workers of the World.
Did you and Davis affiliate to any organisation at this time?
No. I never affiliated to any organisation at all. I didn't join any organisation. I was interested, but I saw no need to join any organisation. I didn't want to be an active participant as such. I was on the fringes, more or less, all the time. Whether it was a demonstration or time, Mosley was active in London. We used to go to Mosley's meetings and heckle and all that thing. And the Balkan Street. Remember the Balkan Street marches and all that, where Mosley, where the big riots were, where it was at that lot there, you know, demonstrating.
At Cable Street?
Cable Street.
Were you in the Cable Street?
I was in the
demonstration.
Yes.
What did you see of that?
Well, I can always remember being frightened when I saw the police horses coming for me. I was terrified. And also, I was running away, and I was terrified I was going to fall down.
Yeah. Can you tell me how were the police horses charging?
Yeah. They were really charging into the crowd. Really charging into the crowd.
How many of them?
Oh, I can see half a dozen horses now charging into the crowd.
What was the purpose of doing that, do you think?
Well, because the demonstrators were trying to stop the fascist marching. Oswald was marching. They were trying to break up his march, you know, rush the march. And the police was protecting the march, you know, running along.
So they were trying to clear away.
That's right.
Do you know whereabouts you were stood in the Cable Street?
Well, I was on the fringes. You know, everybody was trying to see the march. Everybody was watching the march and booing and shouting. But I wasn't at the very point where the people tried to break up the march. But the whole thing scattered. There was a crowd. Everybody was vanishing.
When the
police horses came, yes.
So they did clear the crowd?
Oh, they cleared the crowd, all right. They clear the crowd, all right. Oh, yes. You're terrified. It's the most terrifying thing with a horse coming down on you and knowing that you could be trampled on.
Did you see any other violence at Cable Street?
No.
So if the crowd scattered...
I scattered with them.
Could the black shirts get through?
Yes, well, I understood after the march proceeded. But, I mean, I a couple of us, Billy Davis and me, after the police broke us up, we lost more or less interest and we went on our own way.
How did you hear about the Cable Street demonstration?
Oh, there was posters about everywhere. Everybody knew about the big fascist march in the Jewish quarter. It was, you know, common knowledge in London at the time.
What did you think of the black shirts at the time?
I didn't like them at all. I didn't like their philosophy. I didn't like their policy. I didn't like them at all. And I'd read about, you know, Mussolini and his fascists in Italy, and about Hitler. And I had a couple, lots of friends who knew a lot of Jewish friends. You know, it was tales going round. I didn't hear anything myself directly, but hearsay. This is not a hearsay information.
Apart from the anti-black shirt demonstrations, what other issues were you taking up in London personally?
Well, that was all. That was all. Only anti-fascism. Only the anti-fascist demonstration. Nothing else. There was nothing. It was the most exciting thing at the time.
What about unemployment? Was that?
Yes. Well,
unemployed
no.
Demonstrations?
The funny thing about being unemployed, you took that in your stride. You were unemployed. You knew there was no hope of getting a job, so you just lived with that fact. You were unemployed, and there was no hope of a job. Tried for jobs, but every time it was a hopeless situation. So we were philosophical about being unemployed. I can remember going to street markets and buying broken eggs, broken biscuits, fish that was 2-3 days old. You know. All this is all part of the fun. We were young.
Yeah. Did you actually go hungry?
No. Never went hungry, but went, you know, had a big appetite. Sometimes never went hungry, but could always look for anybody give us a square meal. We were always looking for it. Never went hungry as such. We'd always manage a tin of soup or a tin of beans or something.
Would people give you square meals?
Well, your friends, perhaps somebody was working, he'd say you come along and, you know, I'll give you a couple of sandwiches or something like that. Yes, yeah, so everybody was in the same boat. It was difficult, but somehow we managed. You weren't isolated in your difficulties. It was a group feeling about it.
Were there public soup kitchens which you would use?
There was the Silver Lady, they used to call her. Yeah, we used to go down there 2-3 nights a week where we had bread and dripping and a bowl of soup.
What was it called?
I think it was called the Silver Lady.
What was the Silver Lady?
She'd come around with a big caravan and she'd issue soups. It's around Trafalgar Square where it was, around the embankment.
Who was organising her?
Oh, I don't know, some charitable organisation or something or the other. There was always a lot of us around there at that time.
What, she would come in a cart or something?
In a trailer thing. She'd come around.
And why was she called the Silver Lady?
I don't know. I don't know why she was called a Silver Lady. I never know why she was called a Silver Lady. I wasn't really, didn't think of things like that. Let's go down to see the Silver Lady, that's all we knew. Didn't question why. We'd have a nice piece of chunk of bread and dripping and perhaps some bowl of soup.
Were they grim times or happy times for you?
Well, they were grim times sometimes, but because of being young, things you see in a different light. I enjoyed myself in my own way, looking back. I enjoyed myself.
How would you spend your time as an unemployed person in London?
Oh, well, we'd walk around London, go and see the sights. I mean, for example, I'd use my time in London good advantage. I went to all the museums. I'd never been to the museum. I went to the Tower of London. Walked everywhere, mind you. And I enjoyed a lot of our time like that and sat in cafes all day, petty cup of tea and talked to other people. And then in the Hyde, go to Hyde Park. Every day we were in Hyde Park, listen to the speakers. Enjoyed myself in Hyde Park, listen to the speakers. You learn a lot there.
What points of views did the speakers represent?
Well, as young fellas, we used to go to speakers who we didn't agree with because we could heckle better. It's no fun going to people you agreed with. We'd go to the opposite people and we'd heckle. Any fascist meeting, we'd be there.
You say that you declined to be affiliated or organised, no. But did you mix with people who were committed politically to an organisation?
No, only with the group I was with. Or most of them were, there was kind of a ghetto of valley people there, unemployed miners, young miners like ourselves. Everybody lived in various groups, and the group I was in, I lived in Edgware, Paddington Green, if you know where that is in London, Paddington, around that way. And there was lots of unemployed Welsh miners around there. It was a group. And you went to Hyde Park on a Sunday night, all the Welsh singers were there, you would be singing. You so stuck to your community, more or less.
You were living in rented accommodation, right?
That's right. In digs, in the rented, oh, sorry, in a room. It was one room we had, there were three of us were in there. I think we paid about £6 a week or something for it each. And it was small beds in it, four or five beds in a room.
Where was your source of money from?
Only the door, £17 a week. 17 shillings a week.
And it was enough to survive on?
Yes, you had nothing. You had nothing. We never went to the... I never can remember going to the cinema all the time. I was on the door in London. Never went to the cinema.
Could you keep warm?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We were clothes, you know. We were all right. I can't remember any feeling hardship, put it that way. Must have been hard, but I didn't realise it at the time. Looking back, I realised, oh, my God, it must have been a tough life. But at that time, no. At the time, no.
Did you fall sick?
No. I was perfectly fit. Perfectly fit.
Was there no way of turning your skills in nursing to earn some money?
Well, there was kind of a laissez-faire atmosphere about the whole system at the time. Everybody you talked to seemed to be out to work. Everybody always hoped to get a ruddy job. Everybody seemed to be scrounging, everybody seemed to be on the mick, trying to earn an extra penny there. And at one time I thought I'd better come home and live with the rest of my family. But suddenly an opportunity came. I had a letter from the War Office. That was August, no, let me see. That was in January 1936, that's right, January 1936. I had a letter from the War Office asking if I would like to be called back into the colours for a limited period. And it was the time of the Abyssinian War with Mussolini in Abyssinia. So I said, yeah, I replied, and they called me back up. And I went to Crookham Camp there, and there was about 400 or 500 of us called back up.
What happened?
Well, we'd done our... a kind of a fortnight square bash in there to refurbish us up, and we were kitted out and we sailed right away to Egypt.
What happened to you there?
Well, then we were in Egypt, all the time we were in Egypt. We stationed in a place called Heliopolis, just outside Cairo, and we were under canvas on the edge of the desert there, and we were just spending our time training, going out to the desert, pitching camps, field hospitals and all that, and just keeping in training all the time for 6 months.
So you didn't have to go back into the army?
I went for that 6 months.
Were you obliged to do it? Or?
Well, they asked if you would volunteer to go back, and I volunteered, yes. I was just back in the army for 6 months. And in the 6 months, August 1936, we all came back home. We were debobbed the second time.
Had the army changed much since you'd been in?
No, it hadn't changed. It changed a bit. The wages had gone up from £2 a day, I think, to half a crown a day. A little change, but not much. But, of course, the discipline that we were was a bit lax because we were called up for 6 months. We knew we were in for a limited period. They didn't say we were called up for 6 months, but we were called up for a limited period. They didn't give us a time. It could be a year, 2 years, but the limited period. But it lasted 6 months. And then we came back. I always remember coming back on the SS Otranto from Port Suez, Port Said, rather.
So there'd be no real changes in the techniques that they were using in the RAMC?
Yeah, there was a little change because When I was initially in the RAMC, we were trained to, stretch a bed in a chain, the splint system of chain. My initial training at Aldershot in the early days was Thompson splints, but then they had different idea of splints and different idea of bandaging and things like that. But fundamentally, it was quite the same.
Did you expect that there might be a war with the Italians in Abyssinia?
Well, when we were going out there, we thought that we might be sent somewhere. We had no idea, but we thought we might be sent somewhere. No doubt there was... We were the medical unit that went out. No doubt there were other battalions went out as well, which I didn't know anything at all about at the time. But there were other battalions went out to the Suez as well at the same time. But I was in a medical unit. I was in the 13th Field Ambulance Brigade.
What rank were you when you left the army?
Private.
Whilst you were in Egypt, the Spanish crisis must have come to a head.
Now, this is the strange thing. When we were coming back on the SS Otranto, funny things that you remember. The ship stopped at to either disembark or people to come up at Majorca. And the Spanish Civil War was on then. And long started, but there were people who were coming on that ship who were escaping from Majorca from the war. I always remember that.
What was their appearance?
Oh, they're ordinary. They didn't seem to see. No, they were quite normal, quite all right. They were ordinary travellers. But I can always remember somebody on the ship saying, these are people escaping from the war, from the Franco. I didn't say Franco then, but there was a war on in Spain.
How many of them?
I think there must have been about 100. Yeah, it could have been about 100 people.
Had you been following what was happening
in
Spain?
No. Then I followed it. Then when I came home, I followed it then, because I remember telling my father, I saw people come on the ship. I didn't realise there was war, but I heard people talking.
What were the things that impressed you about the Spanish situation when you started to learn about it?
Well, the fact that it was a war at all in Spain. I mean, I never thought of a war in Spain. I thought of a war in Abyssinia, because that's where it just come from there. Or war some in other different part, but never a war in Europe. No, never give it a thought at all. And then I didn't think much about it even in the beginning. I thought it was just a civil war. There were various riots. It was a kind of a major riot. I didn't think it was a war as such.
What happened to you on arrival back in Britain?
Well, I came home. I came home, went to my mother's house, and I stayed there for a while. And then I went, Billy Davis, my friend, by that time, he'd gone to Spain. He'd volunteered for Spain. And I went back to London. From my home, I went back to London. I think I went back to London November 36, that's right. And I had a brother in London at that time, and I went to stay with him. And he was working. He was a carpenter in London. I stayed with him for a while. And I couldn't get a job. I tried to get a job. And then I went to Hyde Park one night, and there was somebody talking about the war in Spain was really going big guns by now. And I thought, well, I don't know.